C+29. McKinley Dwyer Hospital, Colorado Springs, Colorado. The doctor took a visibly deep breath, his chest rising and falling very slowly.
Well?
Tara said, rising to her feet. The doctor tried to force a small smile. Well, she's not yet conscious, but she is stable, he said. Although Tara was somewhat eased by this, it wasn't the news she had really feared. Dan and Clark shared an uncomfortable look. After Henry McCarthy's serious accident the previous year, stable had been every doctor's favorite word. But within a few days, the brothers came to realize that it wasn't always a good one to hear. The wrong kind of stability saw months go by before Henry even opened his eyes, and his life was never the same from then on out. But so great was their concern, Dan, Clark, and Tara would all have gladly taken a similar outcome to Henry's if it was offered up. Right now, all they wanted to hear was that Emma was going to make it. Tara wasted very little time in asking this outright, cutting short the doctor's rundown and catching him off guard. He opened his mouth to reply, then closed it again to rethink his words. No one could ever accuse Dan of being an expert on reading body language or facial expressions, but the doctor didn't look comfortable. The scans have revealed some head trauma, he eventually said, but I'm more optimistic about your sister's prospects than I was before I saw the results.
So she will be okay?
Tara pushed, putting him firmly on the spot. Again, he chose his words carefully. At this stage, it's too early to say anything so definitive. Tara went again.
But I'm asking if she'll make it.
Well, as I said, it's very early. What I can say is that of all our scans, and there have been several, none have revealed anything else of immediate concern. There were concerns about a direct injury to the abdomen, but fortunately, there's been no organ damage.
Did the scans show anything on the back of her neck?
Tara asked, her tone suddenly changing. The doctor shook his head. It's the head trauma that's concerning us. So nothing showed up on her neck? Clark asked, quickly seeing that Tara wasn't asking about a potential neck injury, but rather a potential trace of something extraterrestrial in the spot where Emma and Dan felt pain whenever the messengers were close. The doctor, looking more than a little confused by what they kept asking about Emma's neck, reaffirmed that there were no concerns about either a neck injury or arterial damage from the shrapnel. There won't be anything to see, and she won't have felt anything there, Dan said, talking aloud mainly to himself and not giving a thought to what the doctor might hear. I didn't feel anything. They weren't there. They let it happen, but they weren't there. What's this? The doctor asked.
So when can we see her?
Tara butted in, not to halt Dan's oversharing, but purely because she was desperate to know.
I want to see her.
The doctor sat down and told them that it would be best for everyone if they all went home to await more information. Emma was under extremely close observation, he said, and not in an area designed to receive visitors. He said that even if or when she regained consciousness, there would only be room for one visitor at most, and that frequent switching between them wouldn't be possible. The man was curt in his words, neither kindly nor dismissive, and spoke to them exactly as he would have spoken to anyone else. Clark turned to Dan. You okay with that?
I'm staying, Tara answered for him. He said one visitor will be allowed when she's conscious, and I want to be here so she's not on her own when she wakes up.
We'll stay with you, Dan said. Tara shook her head.
It would be different if you could see her. What about Timo? You could visit him. And don't take this the wrong way, but since you can't see her anyway, I sort of want to wait here by myself.
Again, Clark looked at Dan. This time, Dan relented. He wanted to be there when Emma woke up too, but the doctor had made it clear that only one person would be allowed in, and he couldn't exactly barge her little sister out of the way. Thank you for your understanding, the doctor said as he walked back towards the door he'd come from. We'll keep you informed of all developments. Clark told Tara to call him if she needed anything at all. They wouldn't be far away, then encouraged Dan to get up. The news could have been a lot better and it could have been a lot worse, but rather than relief or concern on Dan's face, Clark saw anger. He himself felt a burning rage at whoever had planted the IED, and he wouldn't rest until they faced justice.
but he was surprised to see that a similar feeling was also getting the better of Dan's other emotions.
At least we know it wasn't them, Clark said as they stepped outside. Like you said, because otherwise you would have felt something, wouldn't you?
Dan stopped walking.
Why would you even think it might have been them?
Maybe because we were going to show the plaque and they didn't want us to, or the footage, maybe?
Then why the fuck would they give us it? Dan snapped. Clark was slightly taken aback. He knew the anger wasn't directed at him, but it was more than rare to hear an F-bomb coming out of Dan's mouth.
I'm just thinking out loud, man, Clark said. When Tara asked about Emma's neck and you said you didn't feel anything, that was the first time I thought about them at all. You're the one who said they weren't there.
That's the whole point, Dan scowled, his volume low but his tone fierce. They weren't there. They jump in like it's nothing when Walker is about to say the wrong thing in an interview, but they do nothing when Timo and Emma are about to be blown up? What kind of bullshit is that? They could have stepped in. They could have saved her. So why didn't they?
Clark had no answer to this. He hadn't been asking himself the question, but now that Dan had raised it, he could understand the anger on his face and the venom in his tone. Dan's heart was filled with rage at the terroristic and nihilistic welcomers he saw as almost certainly responsible for the attack, but his most pronounced anger lay at the door of the supposedly friendly extraterrestrials who had decided to let it happen. Nearing their parked car, Dan knelt down on the tarmac and threw out his hands.
"Where are you?" he bellowed. "Huh? Where the hell are you? Why didn't you do something? Why didn't you save her?"
Clark saw a woman looking down from an open window on the hospital's third floor. She wasn't filming them, at least, and he figured that to an uninformed bystander, Dan's words would surely sound like they were aimed at God, rather than a group of selectively non-interventionist extraterrestrials. It didn't take long for Dan's head to fall and for his eyes to start letting out the tears he had been holding back for so long. As more people gathered at the overlooking windows, Clark helped Dan to his feet and into the car. The onlookers were almost certainly sympathetic to what they were seeing, but that didn't mean Clark wanted them to see any more of it.
"We should take this stuff home to the basement before we go to see Timo," Clark said, gesturing to Timo's plaque-containing briefcase and Trey's footage-containing laptop, which both lay under a blanket on the back seat.
Dan nodded.
"It's not a lot of use to us now, anyway," he said, looking despondently through his passenger side window. The sky was clear and empty. Beyond the slightest of doubts, he was alone.